Hello and welcome to Digital Logic PC Gaming Podcast with Ender's Logic, Flopsy, and your host, Robert Digital. Now turn your game volume down, your earbuds up, and fucking enjoy.
Welcome to our 100th episode. I feel like we should be doing something really big for this, but we're not.
On the contrary, we're actually, it's going to be a short show and we don't have anything to talk about.
Yeah.
In typical DL Gaming fashion, we'll probably commemorate it like three episodes later.
Yeah. And it's hard to say that this is really our 100th episode because I'm counting the little ones we did where Emilio was, or you guys were at CES, not CES.
Right.
PAX.
Yeah. Okay, so we got some time then.
Yeah. It's not like 100 proper episodes. It's probably more like, this is probably like 97, 98.
Right, right.
If we're splitting E3. Hairs. Yeah, E3.
And let's be honest, they didn't really start until I got on the show, so.
Yeah, well, then we got a ways to go.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to kick it off with Question the News, where we pick news articles and then take a question. Or create a question from that news article. Who wants to go first on this one?
I got mine up here, so I might as well. The Federation of Associations of in Behavioral and Brain Scientists.
I follow them religiously.
Yeah, the FABS. I put that all out there because this is actually somebody that is accredited, and you know they're not just putting things out there. Because they have anybody with an acronym is legit, right?
Correct.
Right. And so,
like us, DLG.
They said, you know, you can't just say our game's good for the brain. It's kind of saying like, what are the effects of food on the body? There's like so many kinds of food, so many types. So same thing with games, looking at different games and their cognitive, how well they help, brain activity and memory and, you know, tracking points of interest and all that stuff. So, action games like Counter-Strike or something like that actually was at the top of the list and have more cognitive benefits than actual brain games like Luminosity. That's the big company that totes brain function or fitness. So it's interesting that they even said commercial games have more because it's such an immersive experience. I guess it tricks the brain even more into like as if they were real world situations. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question is, do you think we'll ever see games in the set curriculum of schooling? Like obviously kids enjoy games more. Obviously it's good for you. Will there be a day where it's just like sit down at your computer, you play, your homework is playing this game for 3 hours or beating this game.
I don't think so because I like to compare it to, let's say, like sports. If you go to the gym and you work out, you're not going to be a better baseball player. So if you go to school and you play games, like, yeah, you're going to be in maybe a little bit better mental condition, but you're not going to be able to do algebra or, you know, vocabulary. It's not going to improve those types of things.
No, I'm saying games that teach you those things as well.
Yeah, I don't know if those are really all that effective.
So, for example, like Typing of the Dead, could you see a curriculum using Typing of the Dead to teach typing?
Not that one. I mean, that's why I bought it, but it was pretty shitty. You can kind of fudge your way through it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
it's funny about that game because I wrote a script in Visual Basic that just basically mashes all the keys all the time. And I just let that run just to see how it would do. And yeah, I could solo the entire game on that.
Yeah. Only Bobby.
Oh, yeah, that would be something Bobby does. Let me posit a hypothesis for you guys. Do you think, similar to how sugar, our body craves sugar because it is something that our body needs. However, we crave it in such a manner that we often get too much of it because our body craves it, needs it in little amounts, but we end up using it in lots of amounts because right. we can get it so readily.
Wasn't that what someone said last week? Is they said an hour a day is the optimal amount?
Well, I'm the hypothesis that I'm saying is that our body knows playing games can be good for us, mm-hmm. which is part of the reason why we enjoy it, similar to why we enjoy sugar, because our body knows that it's what we want.
Well, it's the reward systems.
The problem is we abuse it. You know, we our brain says, hey, this is going to be good for an hour, and then we play it for 12 hours, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I agree with Bobby. I don't think, I don't know. I saw when we were in high school or middle school, they had like Oregon Trail and they had like other games, Risk we had mm-hmm. on our computers, but we never had class where it was play a game all of the whole class.
It's a good supplement. It's a good supplement to an education, but it's definitely not a replacement. I mean, I play a lot of educational games actually, and particularly one that I like is Influent, where you are a character in a 3D world where you walk around a house and you pick 10 items. And it tells you what those items are in another language, and then it creates a game out of that. And then you can go into verbs, and you can go into, there's all sorts of little games that you can create with this. But still, that's not going to teach me another language. I mean, that's going to get me a little bit of the way, maybe. It's going to help out a little bit, but it's not, I would need a lot more formal education.
Yeah. Like Bobby said, it's the difference between getting your muscles stronger and learning how to throw a baseball. Mm-hmm. Like this is exercising your brain. Your cognitive skills are better. Your reaction time, maybe how many objects you can identify simultaneously. Mm-hmm. But school, at least in America, is all about, you know, knowledge. It's about learning statistics and facts and formulas and all that stuff. That's what they test you on.
There was this old... I feel like we've got a lot of motorcycles today, man. It's like rush hour.
That's why.
Yeah. But there's this old Simpsons episode where Bart and Milhouse are playing a game, and it turns out to be educational, and Bart stands up and says, wait a minute, they're trying to teach us something. And he, like, throws the controller away. And, like, that always stuck with me because I feel like that's how a lot of kids respond to educational games. As soon as they're onto the fact that you're trying to teach them something or that there's some kind of agenda, like back in the day when they had all those Bible games, as soon as they figure out that, you know, there's some sort of hidden agenda there, then they're immediately off-put by it and they dismiss it.
What was that one game that you kept trying to play that was like in the Middle Ages and you played as real people when it was heavy strategy?
Crusader Kings 2.
And didn't it like lay out all the history around everything mm-hmm. that was going on? I think games like that can be interesting because mm-hmm. they can teach you a lot about the history while you're playing the game. Another one was, what was that? Side-scrolling one that took place during like World War One.
Oh,
it was Valiant Hearts.
Valiant Hearts. Yeah. That was the same thing. You picked up
items and it told you a little bit of history about it.
Told you the history and all.
I think history is probably the closest subject that works mm-hmm. with educational games.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
You guys.
Did you think that they will at some point have games?
I just don't think that a lady or a person standing in front of 50 kids is going to be the way it's done in 100 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's going
to be. You were never big into school. So I think it never.
Way more into games.
Yeah.
I should have a podcast.
Yeah, you should. All right. So there was a game called Raven's Cry, and that came out a year ago and was pretty much universally panned. Well,
I don't know where you're going with this, but I will say this game was on my wish list because I was like, pirates? All right, I'll see what this is about.
Panned, yeah.
I never heard that.
It was bad.
People had bad reviews.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyways, just recently they pretended like they didn't release it originally, renamed it to Vendetta Raven's Cry's Revenge.
Oh, the kids got moxie.
And then they... you know, posted, hey, we finally come out after a lot of hardship and struggles. We finally released our game. And there was a ton of improvements on it.
Hmm.
So my question is, what game would you, if you had the opportunity for you to go to the developer and publisher and say, you know what, guys, this is a good idea. Why don't you try it again and see where you can go?
Well, first of all, are we okay with this? Is this something that you can do?
I feel like a lot of games are doing this these days. You know, a lot of games are taking like a second swing at their game. Look at Batman. You know, it's like, oh, well, that didn't work out. Check back with us in November.
Right.
Some do this, but they have it under the guise of a open beta.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Even The Witcher 3, to a certain degree, they had huge patches later that fixed a lot of issues. I mean, that's not nearly as an extreme case as this, but yeah, hardly ever anymore. It wasn't like back in the day where a game came out and boom, that's what you get and there it is. You know, I mean, maybe that happens sometimes these days, but a lot more we're seeing this kind of situation.
So for myself, I'll give you guys a second to think, see if you can come up with anything. Mm-hmm. But I guess I will jump in, and this is probably going to be, people are probably going to disagree with me, but I really liked the concept and idea behind Mirror's Edge. But I didn't really like how it played out. I didn't like how the game actually finished, and I didn't really get a whole lot of enjoyment. But the art style was awesome. I thought the kind of world was cool. The fact that you didn't use weapons was a cool concept. The fact that you're doing parkour, the fact that you were a female lead, I thought was a really cool concept. Everything around the game I thought was really cool, but when I got to playing the game, I just didn't really enjoy it that much. And so if I were to pick one, I would say I want to do Mirror's Edge, but do it right. Make it fun and enjoyable.
Isn't there a new Mirror's Edge coming out soon?
There is.
Or maybe it'll get your wish.
I hope so.
I think generally it was well received, though. I had a good time with it.
I totally get that most people enjoyed it. I just did not get any.
EA, make one for Chad. Just Chad edition.
The Chad edition.
Yeah, the one where you can't lose.
You guys, you got anything?
It's just one big slide.
It's just a slide. I was going to say in Tomb Raider, there was parts where you're sliding down and you could like hit things. I kept killing myself on a rock in Tomb Raider sliding, so I would probably find a way to lose sliding down something.
I would probably go with Super Monday Night Combat.
Ooh,
because I feel like that was in the early stages of MOBAs when there was a lot of improvement, a lot of room for improvement. And they've come so far since then. I feel like a lot of these new MOBAs that come out try to improve. Well, most of them try to improve on it. Like I played Smite and I'm like, wow, so many things I like better about this than Super Monday Night Combat. But still, there was something about Super Monday Night Combat. There was the announcers were a huge part of it. The fact that it actually was a game or a sport, like that was the setting, was that you were players playing a sport. I like the idea that there was vertical gameplay. The jungle was up or down and it... there was just a lot of things I liked about that other MOBAs didn't have, but still, it wasn't as a cohesive experience as a lot of these other MOBAs.
Who made that game?
I don't know.
I thought that was
Uber something.
Didn't they do something originally,
Uberant?
And then they came
out?
Yeah,
they had a Monday Night Combat.
Yeah, they had Monday Night Combat, then they had Super Monday Night Combat. So, you know, they need to redo it, call it Super Duper Monday Night Combat, or just throw another
Super Tuesday Night Combat.
Why would it be Monday Night Combat, too? Well, I guess football's on Monday, so that's kind of the thing they're going for.
Amino, you got anything?
Yeah, probably Spore. Mm.
That's a good one.
I had never been hyped. I was talking about Spore maybe a year and a half out. Is it Sid Meier?
Yeah.
After Sid Meier announced it at some E3 or something, any little tidbit, I was reading about it conceptually, fucking amazing. I was like, oh, take something from Spore
and all the
evolve
trailers.
It all the way. Yeah, I mean, man, it was exactly what I wanted. And when it came out, it wasn't a bad game. Chad and I both bought it, $50, ran home, installed it, and we both beat it, I think, that same day.
Yeah.
We played like 6 hours straight. So I wasn't disappointed with the final product. I was actually pretty happy with it. But eventually, and I said that it was worth my $50 for that 6 hours or 4 hours, whatever it took. But there's no end game. And I think even to this day, there's no end game for that game.
They had some DLC for it, but they had
some
DLC.
I think that added more variety to what you can make.
Mm-hmm.
There were some limitations. They made it sound like, you know, your mind's the limit, But there, you know, there were some limitations, but you know, hardware. So anyway, a new version of Spore would be fantastic. Maybe some competitive shit. There was competitiveness, but it was your, it was all meta. It didn't really,
it was your world.
You didn't control it. Yeah. Your world versus other worlds, but you didn't control it. You weren't there. You would just get a report card the next day or next week.
Yeah.
And, so now that netcode and all that stuff is, and better, people have way better, internet connections. Now it could actually be done. Hopefully it's not an RTS. I suck at RTSs, but I'm not even, maybe not even competitive, but maybe like who can get the civilization that's the most progressive or that, that can harness the power of suns and who can, you know, be the most powerful civilization. Competitive that way.
Is that what you guys think No Man's Skies is going to be similar to? Because, I mean, that's a lot of those things that you're talking about is similar to what No Man's Sky has been talking about.
Who knows? I don't. Nobody's actually played it. That's the, you know, somebody, PC Gamer, brought up this great point. Nobody's actually played Fallout 4 yet. Nobody has an early copy. It's coming out in like less than 30 days. This is super rare that they're talking about that. Nobody has a copy. Nobody's actually played it. But it is Bethesda. And we can count on them pretty much.
Yeah.
But our thing, you know, I don't know. Delay it a year if you have to. Just don't put out a piece of shit. And remember my plan of playing Star Wars until that? No. I'm fiending for Fallout already. and it's $50 on G2A as well. So
I'm surprised nobody said Battlefront for that last question.
I never played it.
Yeah, I didn't play it either.
No, I'm talking about the new one. The Star Wars Battlefront beta. Because I played that one, I'm like, yeah, they need to take another swing at that game. That one missed the mark a little bit.
People are liking it. That's
the beta. And it's Star Wars. And it's fun. Like, they're making it accessible.
Yeah, no, I get it. I was expecting more Battlefield, and it is definitely more Battlefront. So, I don't know. I'm not disappointed in it. But it's, I don't think I could play that like I played Battlefield 4 or even Battlefield 3. Like, I got 120 hours in Battlefield 4. Like, I played a lot of that game, and I still like it, but I think I would still rather play that than Battlefront.
I don't think they're aiming for you. I think they're aiming for my friend Jeremy, who is just a Star Wars nut, but hasn't played games in probably 15 years.
Yeah, they'll get the Star Wars crowd with that, and I think it's very accessible. They'll get to a lot of console players with it, you know, people that are coming from Call of Duty or something like that.
The co-op versus waves. I mean, I think we could totally have fun with that, you know?
Yeah.
Trying to hit some leaderboards with that. Hardcore player. I mean, there's something for the hardcore player if you look for it. Those giant, that giant Hoth map, it's just a clusterfuck. The smaller 8v8, I think it was, with no vehicles, I found that to be a lot more competitive.
I think, it's kind of, they're right now, they're trying to shoehorn gameplay into content we've seen in movies. And it's just hard to, like, the Hoth battle in the movie, only one side ever wins. Like, you don't watch the Hoth battle three times in the movie.
In the beta, too.
Yeah. And so they're trying to shoehorn that fight in, but in the movie, one side always wins. So how do you make it fair when one side is always going to win? So I don't know.
Well, we'll see when they have a full release.
I'm still hopeful. I mean, I'm not even hopeful. I know that there's enough there, and EA is good enough a company. It's not going to suck. And if it does, they'll patch it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, what's your question, Bobby?
All right, the news article I will be talking about was actually shown to me by David Is Winning. He mentioned this because he knows I like to play Payday 2. But apparently, they've said for the longest time they're not going to do microtransactions. Oh, yes, and then with the most recent patch, apparently they are. They're basically doing the TF2 CSGO thing where they have crates, except in this case, they're safes. And instead of using keys to unlock a crate, you use a drill to drill open a safe. So they're pretty much copying Valve's method of doing that. And a lot of people are really upset about this, obviously. But I know you guys really don't... you played a little bit of Payday 2, but you didn't really play as much as me or get that invested in it. What do you think of this model in general, the whole crate loot key system where you buy the keys, you open a crate, you don't know what you're going to get. You have an option to get something really good. I mean, would you rather have that as opposed to just buying items directly?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Bobby, because I just got into this whole thing on TF2, kind of. I've been buying keys and I've been opening loot. And it's funny because you can make money. You can make money playing TF2, but you also have to invest. And there's, it's gambling, basically, because you don't know what you're going to get. But one good payoff can pay for... If I get one good weapon, which I have it...
So you've been losing
money. It would by far pay for it. But in doing that, I've also got a bunch of stuff that I'm actually using, you know, cosmetic stuff and stuff that I was like, oh, this is sweet. And so... In the gambling, there are winnings that aren't money. There are things that you would have bought on your own. So, like, I'm willing and dealing, and this is all like under $5 total. Like, a whole day of willing and dealing could be less than $5, maybe $3 out, maybe $2 in or something like that.
So even if you don't get any big items, you can still sell the ones you've made.
And yeah, you're messing around. It's more like messing around. There's no real money in it, but I could totally see, like, somebody getting really into this and doing it. I don't know if you could do it full time, but some people do, I guess, right?
Well, the thing in these games, too, is that what CSGO and TF2, all the things that you get are cosmetic.
Yeah. And is the Payday one cosmetic?
I don't think so. I think you actually get weapons, you get items, armor, drills. Like, you actually get items with different stats.
So, I think this This right here keeps the community alive.
Yeah.
Once you put money into it, it keeps people interested, and it's a sneaky but of a way that actually works to keep people interested in your game, and because you never know, it adds that you never know what you're gonna get, and so you could sell the crates. I think the TF2 crates are going for 60 cents right now, but if you open it and you pick up, there's $400 sniper rifles out there. So, and they sell. It's not like they don't sell. So that's like when Dick Nick got a $400 knife one time. Yeah. So
I think in this particular instance, I'm okay with it. The game's over 2 years old. They're probably running out of like their life cycle. And so they're trying to do a last bump, try to get people interested in a little bit of a cash grab, I probably admit. But I think if you've been playing this game for 2 years, you've gotten your money out of this. If you want to continue, you just put a little more money to support it. You know, I think it works out. Maybe it gets more people interested in the game, and if you are into the game, then you want more people into the game. So I don't really see a huge downside other than the fact that they said they would never do it, and then they are doing
it. Yeah, they were like these outliers that were, you know, I kind of trusted Payday to never do that. For some reason, I just always look at, oh, they're kind of like the Guild Wars of first-person cooperative shooter. So I was like, always like, oh, well, you know, whatever I buy for them, I know it's permanent, but, you know.
And this game's awesome, by the way.
Yeah,
If you never played Payday 2, it's 8,000 times better with other people to play with. So
randos, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not, but like... Being on the mic with each other and talking and working through the heist is so fun. It feels like you're actually in the heist. So I love Payday 2. I didn't think we played it. I don't think enough. We played it enough.
Yeah. Bobby and having Bobby as a superhero come save you over and over and over.
The problem is for a lot of times we only had three people. So we had to either do the three-man missions or we needed a fourth rando.
It scales to how many people you have. So it is a little more difficult sometimes if you don't have enough. But I feel like they've really milked this game as far as they can. They came out with the first Payday, which I played quite a bit of, too, and I really liked it. And the second one was like, it wasn't that different. It was like going from Left 4 Dead to Left 4 Dead 2. It was like the same thing, but they kind of tightened up the screws and made a little bit better of an experience. And you could tell, like, this one they're going to put all their effort into. And look how much DLC they have. We're looking at their Steam page right now, and the DLC fills up, like, an entire page. You know, and they have continually come out with DLC. In the last 2 years, it's like every month or two is a new DLC. So I feel like this is the last thing that they're going to do to make some money out of this game. And I don't know. If it turns out to be that you can get a big advantage by opening these crates and you actually have to spend more money to stay competitive in this game or to really level up, then, yeah, that might be a little bit of an issue. But
it isn't competitive, right?
It's cooperative, right? But is there leaderboards? There's leaderboards.
No, I don't think there is. It's not competitive like in a versus mode, but I'm just saying if you want to be like, if they put a really hard difficulty on there, like Death Wish, and you want to be able to do that, you're going to have to spend extra money to be able to compete at that level.
What I'm hoping that it is that they have so much DLC. I'm hoping the crates are unlocking DLC content. So you could unlock the DLC through the DLC content or try to unlock it through these crates.
See, I kind of felt like the Payday 2 was getting a little oversaturated with a little too many options when it came to guns. You know, that was one thing I didn't like about Battlefield 4. You know, you've got a gun and then you've got about 50 different muzzles you could put on it. You could put different lights, sights, stock, you know, all these things. And it's just, and you have to unlock all of them. And really at the end of the day, what difference does it make? I mean, it's almost trivial in a sense, but
tiny percentages.
Yeah.
The game developers need to satisfy the completionists people that are out there, that, you know, those gamers that need to complete everything. And so they put stuff like that to ramp up how much completion, because if you're talking about like Battlefront or something like that, it's just playing the game. So where are those completionists? How do you get those completionists involved and interested?
Well, there's leveling up and unlocks.
I know, but the unlocks are the ones that are unlocking all those little micro changes to your gun, right?
No, there's different guns and...
Oh, are you using them to unlock
them? Battlefront?
Yeah.
You get those cards that let you change your kit and you get different guns, but I don't know if you can change...
No, we're talking about the old Battlefront, right?
Oh, the old one. New one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, well, that's question the news. Let's move this along to what we've been playing. Emilio and I played Pulsar Lost Colony, and this is a game that is in early access, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Very early access.
I'll put some info on it.
Who's the developer? Do we know who it is?
Yeah, he'll bring it up right now. They sent me an email, and they said, you know, just when you talk about it on your podcast, make sure everybody knows it's very early access. And so there is that caveat when we're talking about this. Although there isn't that much bad to say about it. I really enjoyed this game. It was.
Did you guys play just the two of you guys, or did you play with the listeners?
No, we played. I don't think any of our listeners have the game. It's going for $24.99. It is early access. The developer is
Leafy Games. I thought it was
Leafy Games, which I'm not familiar with.
I think it's a first time developer.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what? We played a game. Just Emilio and I jumped into a game, started playing, and other people started coming in.
Oh, nice.
And eventually two people who were playing together also joined our server, and I was hosting. They joined the server, and they stuck it out, and like one of them was a little knowledgeable in the game and kind of knew how to do things and gave us some tips and told us what to do. And we played a game a couple months ago called Artemis, right? Yep. And we all kind of liked that game, but felt like there could be a lot more to it. This is the same idea, but I feel like they just took it to that next level. They really, you can do so much more in this. It's visually a lot more appealing. And I actually had a lot of fun with this.
This is Artemis if Artemis didn't suck.
Yeah.
You're just going to come out and say it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. This is everything that we wanted. Quests?
No, see, Artemis did not have any quests.
It was
aside from the whole visual.
Did this?
Oh yeah, course. Yeah. This had quests and missions. You could beam to other ships. You could beam to planets. You could scan for life forms. You could do like everything that you wanted to do in Artemis. So basically, this is a game where you are on a ship, you and up to four other people.
Yeah,
so you can have a crew of five.
Total.
Yeah, you can have a crew of five people. And if you don't have five people, you can make bots. So you have that option as well. But this game is a lot more fun with other people. You're on a ship. There's a couple different ones to choose from. And you're traveling through space, and there's missions that you can pick up. There's docks where you can repair and trade. You can... and each person has to man a different station.
It's pretty much Star Trek.
Is there leveling up at all?
Yeah, there actually is. There's progression for your individual character. So cool. I was the captain. You have to have a captain. I was the captain, and whenever we leveled up by killing, like destroying another ship, you get XP that way. You could spend talent points in certain areas. So, and each person had different talents. Yeah, so I was impressed with that. Like, I liked that. You know, that gives you a reason to keep going and playing the game. The quests, the missions, that was huge because Artemis didn't have that. They had scenarios that people had kind of created and put in there.
Yeah.
But this actually had, like, you know, purpose to it, and I like that. I like the fact that you could actually physically move around the ship, and you could do all the Star Trek things. You know, you could turn off the interior lights to give you a little bit more power. You could... put shields in a different area. You can man the guns. And
gotcha. Was right. this in first or third person?
First person. Either. I think you can zoom out.
Okay.
I just remember seeing you?
Yeah, I don't think you can zoom out. It's just completely in first person. One thing that we mentioned that this could really use was some sort of voice system, some sort of communication system, because communication is obviously key, especially... if you're with people you don't know. Emilio and I were on Skype, but the two other people that joined us, we had to type back and forth to them continually, and that was a little too much labor for my liking.
Yeah. I was going to ask you.
It was too late a couple of times.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're in the middle of a battle. It's kind of difficult to just type something out while you're also trying to man a station.
And then there was a time when I was having issues doing something, and
what station were you, by the way?
I was navigation.
Okay. Or yeah, he was flying the ship. He's the pilot.
So I don't know what it was that I... Oh, it turned out being that I didn't have an overlay, so it was like an F key or something. But Bob left his terminal and physically came over to mine and said, "Get out of the way," and fucking grabbed my terminal and like fixed whatever it was, and then went back to his terminal. And this, something like that, that seems so, in another game, it would have been like, oh, let me just do this or that. But he physically came, he had to leave, which less, you know, could leave us vulnerable or whatever. So that was really cool. The away mission.
That's the realism.
Yeah. The away mission was really cool. We went down to a planet that had a pyramid on it, and we explored the pyramid. Then we came back. Mm-hmm.
We had a bot for our science officer, but the science officer has a scanner. So you actually get down there and you pull up this little tablet and you scan for life forms, and then you can move towards different points of interest with that. Huh. I really like that aspect. It almost felt like, maybe this is a little too, maybe I'm going a little too far here, but I feel like it's like if someone actually made Star Citizen without it trying to be so big and grand. Said, you know what, let's just lower the scale and make something doable, you know, like something that we can actually release in a...
That's exactly what I told that monkey. I was like, this is Star Citizen. Because he wasn't going to pay for it. And I was like, this is Star Citizen, just dumbed down, you know, like mm-hmm. The core of what they're going for.
Yeah.
And so,
can you get additional ships? Like, I assume it starts with one ship, but you can buy other ships, or
I don't know if you have to buy progressions that way.
Because I hosted the game, I had to choose this ship, and there were about five or six, maybe seven of them. There were quite a few to choose from, and some of them were big and slow, but had more weapons.
Oh, they're balanced that way.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you trade off.
Gotcha. I'd be happy with a campaign, and I'd be happy with a sandbox experience. Any way they go with this, they can only go up from here, I think. Yeah. They already have a solid base.
And we didn't get much of a chance to really do any of the missions. I mean, we kind of, right when we just started figuring everything out is when I had to get off. But at first I got in there, I'm like, this looks really confusing. Like, this looks like a lot to take in. And it took a while. It took about an hour or two. And then, especially when that other guy hopped in and gave us all those pointers, like, it really started to come together, and it actually was a lot of fun.
I think it's going to be fantastic when you, in some pirate shit, you invade another ship, mm-hmm. attack their shields.
That was the thing. He told us, the guy we were with, I can't remember his name. I wish I could remember that. But he told us the science officer can like send computer viruses to another ship. Mm-hmm. So I did one of those. I was, you know, the captain doesn't have a whole lot to do, so I was manning the science officer station. So I did that, brought their shields down. Then we could go into another room, teleport to their ship, and then it turns into like a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
You're in there, and you're trying to shoot and kill the other people That's on the awesome. Ship, and then you take it over.
I want to play this.
Yeah, I was impressed with this game.
Cool. Anything else that you think that they should that could improve on since it's early access?
Well, I mean, the graphics are not spectacular, but they are, as I often say, they're good enough for
what they
this
need
game.
To do.
Yeah, they are what they need to be.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be good. there, you know, I think there's things that they're definitely going to smooth out. Just like Collision was a little weird a couple times.
Yeah, they need a jump button because I got stuck in a ship, like, you know, a bottom area.
Or like an unstuck butt command.
Yeah. Well, they give you, and they actually give you an inventory. It's very much like a first person shooter at times because they give you a gun, but they also give you like a little fire extinguisher. So when the ship is like going crazy and catches on fire, you run around and you.
That's cool.
And like if stuff gets really crazy, you got to go down into the engine room and like repair stuff down there. You get a repair gun. Like it's straight up Star Trek, man.
But it's good. It sounds like it could really use a tutorial.
A tutorial, maybe even a story mode. I mean, they don't usually do, maybe I'm off on this, but early access, they don't really focus on story typically, do they?
Yeah,
that's like the last step.
They try to get the game looking the right way and playing the right way, and then they usually...
Our friend, the writer, needs to get up on this.
He can write
a good story for this.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right, so that was Pulsar Lost Colony.
All right, I want to play that this week. Let's see if we can arrange that.
Are we down to stream again on Saturday?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be available. Yeah, nice. We should stream that game.
I might be up in L.A.
Jeez, man.
I know, I haven't been home in weeks.
Okay, so I am the only one who plays video games around here. So the entire highlight and lowlight is me.
I played Battlefront, but I already kind of gave my thoughts on that.
I played Guild Wars 2 whenever I had any free time
and you
to play.
Didn't even do your homework assignment.
What was that?
He wants me to try to play a game where I don't attack anything. I only craft.
In Guild Wars 2.
That sounds terrible.
But I would need to, like, the only way that it could work, so you can, you get two crafting talents, and you can use microtransactions to get a third and fourth one.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to do that. Which, I'm okay spending a little money on Guild Wars 2. I've definitely gotten my money's worth on it. So, but it would be very hard, because when you first get out there, you can't even get the items to start going around.
Beg, lie, cheat, steal, whatever you got to do, man.
Although it will be easier because all crafting items are account bound.
Uh-huh.
So I'll have all my, because my other guy just hit 60 today. So I'll have all that stuff. Yeah. 80 is the cap.
You are into that game, man.
I'm loving it.
Cool.
Which is weird because I don't like any of the classes so far.
Yeah, I go and sit down and he's like, on his 50th hour or whatever, I sit down and he's like, yeah, this game is great. Oh, it looks great. It plays great. I don't like this, and this, and this doesn't make sense. And I'm like, all right, whatever, man. All right, so I played some Titanfall. I only played, like, one game. To me, it seemed like everything
that... Have you played before?
No. Mm-hmm. To me, it seemed like everything that the trailer showed, I felt like I was part of this big battle because there's those bots in there, too. It was pretty hectic. I got schooled pretty hard by some ninja chicks.
So that's not all bad.
But it looks great. It looks awesome. Are people still playing? Yeah. I mean, I had no trouble finding a game.
Because one of the things that I heard was a downside is they have so many bots in there that sometimes you can't tell if you're playing by yourself or with other people. Because they just fill the game out with bots.
No, because when I went in, I saw that the server list, you know, had people. Mm-hmm. It's not bots like.
No, I know what
like
you mean.
Counter, you know, they have bots on purpose.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, to make it seem like a big battle. It's a little. Everybody said this. It's hard to tell, at least at first, who's who. But it's kind of easy when you realize the bots are dumb. They just kind of stand there, and they go out and. But you know. Titanfall, the actual act of Titanfall is amazing. Like, you call down your thing, you can look, see it come down from your big ass spaceship up in the sky, blows up. Really cool stuff. I guess the novelty will wear off in a few games. I only had one. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really cool. I was like, whoa, why do people not like this as much? So it's only $20. I'm playing the free trial, through Origin. So, after a few more games, I'll tell you.
Might be a good deal on G2A. They sell it occasionally for $10 on EA, like retail.
I think you're playing the post-patched
updated. Oh, yeah, this is the best version of it,
yeah,
for sure.
It's probably why you like it, and people that first got it said it was garbage.
Yeah. But I don't think anybody said it was garbage.
It was mixed review. Some people really liked it, some people didn't.
Yeah. The sense of just an epic battle going on, that was the thing that came over.
And that's quickly. I think that's one of the things that we still struggle with, is to make a game feel epic, but still have human involvement, because our AI isn't good enough to mimic humans yet.
Right.
And so, like,
unless it's scripted out.
PlayStation did an attempt to have 256 player maps, and that had mixed reviews. I think the problem is you got to have netcode that be able to support that many people, but also your graphics then would have to be dumbed down because you're trying to put all that through at the same time. So I think we're getting there, but we still need some work on getting these kind of giant maps.
The map isn't that big, but yeah, but you get the sense of it's big, way bigger than it is. They did a good job of the illusion, I thought. But again, I only played one game. Yeah. I also played on the Rain Slick Precipice of Darkness, which is the Penny Arcade game.
Which one did you play? There's four or five.
Oh, the first one, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I really like these games, too. The first two, especially. The third one, they went into basically like someone went into RPG Maker and redid the game in there. But the first two, I really enjoy.
Yeah, this is a turn-based RPG, I guess. But there's timers, so you got to kind of stay on your toes. It's not like paused when it comes to your... So you got to... But the real selling point here is the comedy. I laughed out loud several times. It's really good writing.
Is it better than South Park when it comes to Stick of Truth, when it comes to the writing?
Yeah, it probably depends on your sense of humor, but yeah. I kind of like South Park a little bit more. But these are based off the Penny Arcade comics, which I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with. Tycho and
Gabe.
Brahe or whatever their last name is.
I feel like I laughed out loud more at this. I only played it for 10 minutes. And and my girl was laughing. Because the very first bot that you fight, they're robots that you're up against. They're little juice makers that have gone haywire, so they're called fruit fuckers.
That's from the comics, yeah.
Yeah, and so they're just doing thrusty motions while they're waiting their turn. It's really funny. Oh, and when they do their, if you throw an orange at them, they get distracted and they go and hump the orange. Oh man, it's really funny. The whole thing, everything, almost anything you click on is at least an attempt to make you laugh. It doesn't always get there, but at least they're making the effort. And there's not a lot of funny games, so it's cool.
Yeah.
Anything?
I would definitely play it for free, but I don't think I'd pay for it.
I don't even know if they sell these ones on Steam. I just tried to look it up, but I didn't see it. But a lot of times, these would be on sale for like a dollar or two.
Have they been on Humble Bundles before?
Mm-hmm. I believe they have.
Well, I played it off your Steam account.
But, oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's got to be.
I think I have the first four, but not the fifth.
Okay. Lego Jurassic Park, me and my girl played off of Bobby's recommendation. And
World?
Yeah. I've never enjoyed Lego games. They feel like it's all the same shit with some kind of like overlay on it, whatever the story is. It's the same game insert this story and this story. But I really enjoyed this one. This one was really good. They took the sound bites from the original movie, right? Because I did the start.
Yeah, that was one of his complaints. Yeah.
Oh,
some of the really sound bites, but not all of them were done by the movie.
Yeah. Was it some?
Yes.
Yeah, some, but I don't think
you could totally tell.
Yeah, you definitely could. It totally didn't fit in there.
But, I mean, that's already been acted by professional actors. I felt like it kind of took me back a little bit. I kind of enjoyed that in a way. It was weird because the sound would completely change. It took you out of the story, but it's fucking Legos. So how much are you into it anyway?
I like how they changed the story at certain points to make it a little more G-rated.
Yeah, right. I feel like Lego is the Pixar of video games. It's family friendly. Mm-hmm. This can be enjoyed by the whole family. I know it's a cliche, but it's true. I mean, I'm a old horny man and I was laughing at fucking stupid jokes. And so was my
girl. Also laugh at stupid jokes. That's the other thing you do.
Yeah, true.
That's so, why my intellectual humor never gets you to laugh.
So I thought it was really cool. Highly recommended. I'm going to go on and play. I just finished Jurassic Park. You get two games in one, as most of these go.
Yeah,
so
I should go on to Jurassic World. They have Jurassic Park. They have Jurassic World. They have the second Jurassic Park movie. I can't remember what that was.
But that's a separate game, right?
Well, it's all in the same game, but you
go to different parks.
Yeah, you go to a hub where you can go to either one of these.
Oh. I didn't see, I didn't see Jurassic Park 2 anywhere.
You know, I didn't find that one until much later. I don't know if you have to unlock it or something.
Maybe you have to beat Jurassic Park 1.
Yeah, they might even have the third one. You know, the one where they go back to the island and...
nobody saw Jurassic World or Park 3.
Yeah, the third one was not a good movie, but I think they even threw it in the game, which I was impressed with. Like, okay, you guys are really doing it.
So, a question. Lego games, are they always done by the same company?
I think so.
And which company is that?
I don't know.
I don't know if it's always the same.
Can you look up Jurassic World?
Yeah, but it's very similar. Like, every one that I've played is the same thing. You break shit, you get those little things, then you build things to puzzle solve.
Now, have you done any of the open world stuff in this one?
No, I have no interest in that. I just want to play through the regular
Because thing. There's actually, like, I was kind of interested in some of the stuff. Like, there's a part you can go to where you build your own dinosaur.
Yeah, and I saw
can,
that. Yeah.
Like, unlock vehicles. Like, well, that's kind of cool and fun. Uh-huh. I wanted to get the DLC for this, but I can't find it.
Oh, this is TT Games. Yeah, I think this is the same group that does all the other ones, TT Games.
Yeah, I mean, the gameplay is exactly the same.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I was wondering if it was the same one, because all the gameplay always seems to be the same.
Yeah. But I do, out of all the Lego games I've played, and I haven't played many, I definitely like this one the best.
The Marvel one was really good. Because you had so many different Marvel characters you picked from. It was a lot of fun.
Played Guild of Dungeoneering just because ever since I saw it on E3. Chad, did you like it?
I did. It's still in Early Access, though. Mm. And a listener actually got it for me. I'm drawing a blank on who got it for me. But yeah, I liked it. It still felt a little Early Access. It felt repetitive. Did it get repetitive for you?
I felt like the progression made you use more of the tools. So, no, it wasn't, because later on, how many dungeons did you complete? Do you have any idea?
I did a fairly good. I'm like
on the sixth or seventh dungeon, and it starts to mix it up a little bit by you only have so many turns, or you have to get away from the guy who's coming at you.
Yeah.
Okay. So that mixed it up a little bit. You're unlocking all these different dungeoneers, but there's not a huge difference between them. They just use different kind of cards.
And that was the other thing that I wasn't like super thrilled on. Yeah. I would like a whole new deck of cards, depending on if you're playing a mage or a warrior or whatever. But
it
didn't really just work that way.
Different things, yeah.
Like because your deck builds up as you're going through the dungeon,
right?
And
it just adds
to those all those cards weren't unique. You know what I mean?
Oh, right, like, right.
So they go now to your the deck item. Is bigger.
Right.
Then it was the same cards you're seeing.
Mages don't unlock mage items.
Yeah, exactly.
And cards. It's just whatever is in the dungeon. But the core deck is
different.
Unique. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you're going off your original one. I enjoyed it.
It's a cool concept.
What I enjoyed more than anything else is the actual guild master. He's exploiting these dungeoneers to make money and to grow his dungeon or his guild.
His guild.
And he like berates them when they come back. Whether you won or lost, he makes fun of you. And he has little songs.
Yeah, the music and is awesome.
The music is awesome. Like, it's so good. It's just like a dude on a little guitar.
Like a little lyre or whatever.
Yeah, and he'll make fun of you in song. Like, oh no. And he kind of has this like... I don't know, like a Winnie the Pooh kind of sound or voice to him.
He's supposed to be like a traditional bard from like a... Yeah. But he's funny.
Yeah, he's really good.
It sounds like a lot like the cutscenes in Deponia. They had the same deal. Like somebody would like play a tune on his lute or something.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty similar. But it's very... There's some new things here. Just check it out. It's cheap. I recommend it.
Guild of Dungeoneering.
Yep. My wireless keyboard was giving me the fits, so I...
You've been having...
Hardware issues.
Explain to the listeners what sort of hardware issues, because I've had to hear them every day.
The biggest two has been my keyboard, where it's just... I don't know what's going on. It's almost like sticky keys. The A will hold itself down.
Well, you spend all day nutting into your keyboard, that's going to get a little sticky.
I got to stop standing up when I do that.
Yeah,
seriously. And then... And the hard drive skips all the time when it's trying. Even Binding of Isaac is skipping. So even when I'm doing the most basic things or watching a movie, it skips. So those two things.
You should return that with a warranty that you got.
Hey, Bobby. Meanwhile, I take it out and it says refurbished on it. I was like, hey, I didn't know about that when I negotiated a price.
No, they sent me that one because I had a problem with the original one. I sent that one back. They sent me a refurb and I was like, well, what's the deal with this? They said, oh, all that means is that we updated the firmware on it before we send it out, but it's brand new. Don't worry. And I gave you that one because that one has about half the time on it as the other one. Because you can plug a hard drive in and read the smart status, and it'll tell you how long has this hard drive been powered on. Does it have any flags? Like, does it have any serious errors or something like that? So it's a good idea if you find a hard drive, if you plug that in, find out how many hours. That'll give you an idea of how much life you have left.
How do you find that?
I use a program called HD Sentinel to do that, but there's a lot of other ones that do it as well.
Gotcha.
So I bought the G10. G105 Logitech keyboard. My last one had a really low profile, was flat, almost like a laptop keyboard, and I really enjoyed that. Like a standard one with the big keys. I didn't want to go with the mechanical because after everything I read, it's just like it feels better and it's satisfying. I don't want to add $80 or $90 to my price tag for a satisfying click. So I just stuck with this one. This was $44 or so. It has extra buttons for mapping macros. But what I also thought was really cool, two things. One button actually deactivates the Windows key, so you don't accidentally see it. Yeah, and the other thing is preset keyboard or mouse sensitivities, which my mouse already has. But
I need that.
To have it on your left hand also, or have it set up for certain games, is pretty nice. So it has that as well. One thing I don't like is the macro keys are left of the shift key and the control key and the escape key. So my hand naturally knows where the edge is. Not anymore. I'm fucked right now. I'm like a retarded ape with my keyboard.
Yeah, but I'll
get used to it. So it's not a knock on the thing. It's just I'm a dummy.
Question for you guys. Have you guys used the gaming pad for your left hand? You know, where it replaces WASD, so it's basically set
just
up.
Just the keyboard?
It's not just the keyboard. Yeah, yeah. They changed the scheme up on the left hand.
I had a keyboard that had that built into it. It was a Wolf something. This is years and years and years ago. But yeah, I did not like that one bit. It's something you got to learn. It's not bad, but it's something you just have to learn and train yourself to use. It's like if you get the Razer Hex or the Razer Naga, you've got to train yourself.
Use it like a two-button mouse.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I did with my Razer Naga. 12 keys on the side, never used it.
Yeah. I know some people that actually adjust inward, so they don't use WASD. They maybe use like TGFH or something. Because they say there's all these buttons on the left then that you can use.
Mm-hmm. I can see that, for sure.
I understand the concept, but I've tried that before and just gotten nowhere.
I don't know. The habits are set in stone. There's no way I can change that. I remember when I was really like focusing on learning to type, I found out I had been making one mistake. I was not hitting a certain key with a certain finger that I was supposed to. And it was the hardest thing ever to break that habit. It was like something with the pinky too. Like I was hitting the zero with the wrong key. And, I had to like break that, but there's no way I could switch from WASD at this point.
Yeah. I'm locked in. Well, we're old gamers anyways. We're locked in regardless.
So we have a couple fan questions. Fans.
Holy that could shit. Be the loudest motorcycle ever, dude. On the 100th episode, there it is, folks. The loudest motorcycle.
For the 100th episode, he's going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah. No, dude, that was like a fucking two-stroke dirt bike or something.
There's two
dude.
Of those that go by at midnight every night. So R. Williams asked, how did we all meet?
Oh, yeah, we're on the listener questions. Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome, R. Williams, by the way.
So
somebody else pointed out that we have talked about this before, so if you're an old listener, you're going to hear it again.
You might get some more juicy details of our background. So, Chad, go ahead.
I went to college in California, and when I met a guy, Jason, and when we went home...
You're first Mexican, right?
Yeah.
He's been collecting them since then.
Yeah. Now I only talk to Mexicans.
That's what happens when you live in San Diego.
So, this is the point where you walk to go to the bathroom?
I'm not going to the bathroom. I'm going to the IST.
Oh, okay.
So anyways, I met a guy named Jason, and he lived in a city close to me. So in Christmas time, I went home and met up with him and met all his buddies that he went to high school with. And one of them was Mio. And then later on, when I graduated college, I moved down to San Diego and started living with
Emilio. On our couch.
Yeah, on the couch with Emilio and Jason. And Emilio and I would play EverQuest 2 till the ends of the day. EverQuest 1, sorry. Yeah. Till the ends of the day. And Counter-Strike 1.4, 1.5. Yeah. So,
fucking, and then, in an attic with no insulation, it was so fucking
so hot.
That's where the naked gaming started. Yeah. Shirtless gaming.
Yeah.
And fuck. We bring this up every once in a while. When Chad played so long that he couldn't see his cursor anymore.
26 hours, I think we played EverQuest for 26 hours straight.
He couldn't see his cursor anymore. He's like, dude, I can't see my cursor. I was like, dude, it's right there. I was pointing at it. He's like, I can't see it. I was like, I guess it's time for bed.
Yeah.
Another thing about that attic is, back when those trolls came out, those pictures where you try to figure out what's, and then the monster pops out.
Okay.
So I showed Miguel that. And
back in the early part of the internet,
it scared me so bad I couldn't watch it a second time to see how bad it scares him. So
you set it up and walked away.
Yeah, I set it up and walked away, which walking away included going down those very narrow attic stairs, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, my computer was right next to the stairs. He fell down the stairs. Like, we're, I heard him.
When we're talking about an attic, we're literally talking about, you know, those...
Pull down from the ceiling.
Yeah, the ceiling hatch that you pull down and the stairs kind of, like, crank down. That's the attic we're talking about.
How those computers didn't melt.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Wow. It was insane.
Yeah.
And that was when Steam first came out, right? We were in that attic. Yeah. Trying to set up.
Oh God, this looks terrible. What is
Counter Strike 1. Whatever.
It might have stopped us from playing Counter Strike. Yeah. I think we ain't playing 1.6.
Yeah. Was it 1.6 that Steam came out?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what people still play to this day.
And you guys need to talk about you and Bobby.
Bobby, you go ahead.
When did we meet? 2008? 2009?
Yeah, tell the story.
Who was the mutual friend?
You know who it was? What was his name?
Tyler?
I think it was Tyler.
Yeah.
I think it was a guy named Tyler who we both
crazy
knew.
Dude.
And he lived up in Lompoc.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember I went up to visit him one time. Yeah. We met through him, and we didn't know that we each were like really into gaming or anything, and it kind of came up just randomly one night.
You came over and I probably had TF2 going or something.
No. I remember like we were just talking about shit and, you know, like, oh, what are you into? It's like, and then you started explaining like, oh, well, I play games, but you know, they're like PC games, you know, where you like, and you started going off on this whole thing. Like you're explaining to me like what a PC game was. And I'm like, like, all right, let me stop you there.
Let me just stop
I'm
you.
I'm way
right
ahead
there.
Of you. But, yeah.
How many years ago was that though?
That was 2008.
Okay.
So yeah, that was about 7 years ago. And then after that, you know, we were friends on Steam and we started playing a lot of TF2 together, which was perfect because I was a medic and you were playing a lot of like heavier soldier. Mm-hmm. And then the first game that we all three of us played together was Borderlands 1, which came out in 2009. So yeah, it was like right shortly after
that.
So I remember. Remember that? I guess that's the story. And if you want to hear like the other version of this, go to our very first episode and just listen to that part because I think we tell the same story then too.
The very first, like very, very first one?
Yeah, the very, very first episode.
Well, the first one we released.
Yeah.
There was like two mock-ups.
Because I've done this whole thing before and I wasn't in the first episode, so we explained it again.
So minus the Chad part.
So Amido is kind of like the pivot in our view relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's the one that has sex with both of us.
That sounds like I'm the fucking spit roast in the spit roast.
Yeah.
I don't like that at all.
Bobby's and I are high-fiving each other.
The high-five piston.
Yeah.
Jens asks, guilty pleasure games.
Oh, and we can't say nothing.
Yeah, we can't say nothing. So I have one where I love RTS games in concept, but I can't play them at all. I'm all thumbs. So what I'll do is, but I love them. I love skill trees, tech trees. I love units. I love all that shit. So what I'll do is either put it on the easiest setting with me having like four armies on my team just so that I can get all the way through my tech tree and not attack or anything. I just want to see everything that the game has. So I'll do that with every race or every team or whatever. Or the other thing I'll do, if it gets bad enough, I'll set up a game where I'm playing myself and just, and
then, you will literally play against no one.
Yeah, yeah, just to see all the units. I did this mostly with the first Dawn of War games that came out because they had so many animations. Almost every unit had a kill animation for. So I set it, watched every single like interaction. It was fucking awesome, man. I love those games. So yeah, I'm a big pussy when it comes to RTS.
Bobby,
I'm gonna pick one specific game. For this question, I'm going to go with Go Home Dinosaurs. It is a tower.
Why did we know that there would be dinosaurs in this guilty pleasure?
I don't know why I like this game so much.
Because there's dinosaurs. Well, there's dinosaurs. You just answered your own question.
They're very cartoony dinosaurs, but it's a tower defense game where the dinosaurs are marching towards your barbecue and you're trying to protect the stakes on them. So you've got to set up these gophers that shoot them and prevent them from coming and stealing your steaks.
Somebody was on drugs when they came up with this kind
of concept. Obviously. But I don't know what's so satisfying about this game. I mean, it's not like some accolade of gaming, but it's very enjoyable, and it's something that I play when like I really just want to turn my brain off. Yeah, so Go Home Dinosaurs. Check that one out. That's a recommendation.
It's a hot title.
Yeah.
Saw it on a poster at GameStop, yeah, I think.
Game of the year.
I actually don't have a great answer for this, but...
Samsung, right?
I will say that for as big of a gamer as I am terrible on mobile. Instead of playing like the cool mobile games that are around, I literally had Sudoku on my phone for 4 years and would only just play that on my phone. I think Amelia would have a better idea on what guilty games I have, because every time he'll walk into my room and he'll be like in disbelief that I'm playing some stupid game on my PC.
No, it's really Samsung.
Samsung is a mobile game that I'm playing right now.
Disney, Japanese game.
And you recently played it and said
you can't lose.
And you said it was fun.
No, I lost interest as soon as you realize there's no challenge.
There is a challenge. You got to get to level 10. Get to level 10 and then I'll show you the challenge.
Pretty sure I'm level 10.
Okay, then I'll show you the challenge here later.
Okay.
If I have to actually pick something, MMOs are my guilty pleasure. They are the truest game to me for actually gaming. If I think gaming, my first thought is MMOs. And I know they're kind of out of favor, especially with you two right now. But, like, that's why I love Guild Wars, because it's just hit my MMO guilty pleasure kind of feel. So, that's kind of like what I always want to play is MMOs.
Cool. Let's run through the news quickly, because we've got about 14 minutes left here.
Okay.
Yeah.
StarCraft Pro League players from Team Prime arrested and banned for life. Two of them were banned for life and arrested.
Were they actually arrested?
Yeah. Because they had ties to organized crime.
Oh, that's right.
And there was match fixing. And so, you know, once money is involved, that's crime. So, and they said that the rest of the players are going to come, they're going to receive harsh punishment. So, yeah, let's nip this one in the bud before it goes the way of boxing and gets all corrupt and shit.
And this is obviously in Korea right now, because Korea is the only country right now where it is viewed as an actual sport.
Yes,
like right. I think maybe some fixing might be going on, but the money isn't really there to, like, how much could you really pay somebody to fix it? Obviously, Dota 2.
I saw the numbers here. It was like $4,500. One guy got to throw, but these
30,000 was one guy.
Yeah, to lose two matches.
Yeah,
and then they blackmailed him into losing two more.
Yeah, crazy. It's crazy right now in Korea, I think, but I think this will be coming quickly for us, especially if this daily fantasy starts ramping up for esports.
Yep.
So the groups that are putting these competitions on don't always have the clout and don't always have the money to be able to protect them, the gamers, from this sort of, you know, from what's going on here. So I think it could be kind of tricky coming up here in a little bit. There's going to be money involved and not enough safeguards in place.
Yeah, for sure. Well, anytime there's money, there could be problems.
Yep. I think a little bit there's a little more safeguards because it's on the PC and things can be tracked so much better. But when somebody throws a match, I mean, that's just, that's hard. That human element's hard to oversee.
Yeah.
But it's not like other things where, oh, this guy had fucking lead in his gloves or whatever they were. Mm-hmm. Or was it, oh, plaster. Somebody had a wet plaster. So when the guy checked it, it was soft, but then it got hard by the time the,
We're talking MMA.
No, that was boxing. Boxing. Yeah, I forgot who it was, but anyway. So you guys done with that?
Yep.
Steam Link came out. So did the control. Well, no, people got their hands on it for early reviews.
Not just some people. This person.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh,
so that's why I actually got to hold it, play with it a little bit. It hopefully is just these development models. But it felt very cheap, very, like, flimsy.
Wait, you don't know if you had the final product?
Well, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot in these.
Well, yeah, just the plastic shell just didn't feel solid.
Was it light? Is that what it was?
It wasn't just light. It just felt flimsy. Like you could twist it easily.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, you know, there's the right touchpad, which is very interesting. We'll have to see how it's utilized. It's basically, you know, a touchpad on a laptop, but you can click on it also. So you can move and then click, move and then click. The D-pad is the same way. So developers, I'm assuming, can set it up either a D-pad mode where, you know, you can push in eight directions or whatever, or you can put it up as another touchpad.
Right.
And then they've
got ultimate twin stick shooting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the sticks. So you're going to have to get used to not having sticks.
Right.
You're just running your finger. And that could cause issues if you use it a lot. You know, like, you're running your finger over something just in a constant manner. So you might have new irritations. And
you do that on Samsung all day long, and there's no irritation.
I know, but that's a very flat, you know.
And smooth.
Cell phones are very smooth. Yeah. This has
texture. Like,
textile feel to it. The four buttons are very easy to use. And then on the back, you've got the two triggers. But then there's also the third trigger, which is this back thing, which is the whole back kind of is like this kind of trigger that you can trigger left and right. Mm. It's very interesting. I kind of liked it, but I'm still not used to, like you said, it's not sticks anymore. Mm. It's these kind of like track pads or whatever. So. Yeah. Getting used to it was going to take a little bit of work, but there is potential there.
I want to try one of these because, unlike you guys, I really never got used to the analog stick. I really stopped playing consoles heavily right when they went from D-pad to the analog stick. So, I don't know. I think I would be able to adopt this new format a little more naturally.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like one of those things where, snowboarding's easier if you've never skied.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to do something that I think is kind of impossible. They're trying to make a mouse and keyboard fit into your two hands like a controller. Mm-hmm. And so they're doing the best they can with it. And so I think they're doing some good stuff. And we'll see how it goes and how developers can use this. You know, it's a new peripheral. Let's see how the developers use it and interact with it.
Yeah. One of the developers said that we know this is the final cut. Like, we're going to get feedback and we'll come out with another. But, I'm really interested in getting my hands on it. Did you like it overall?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
With a caveat that I'm hoping that it was a developer version and the final version is a little more substantial.
I hope so as well. The Link itself is a streaming device. Everything that I've read, everybody loves it. It's basically the same thing you can get from all these other companies for about $50 less. All the other streaming devices are starting at about $100. This one starts at $50, and it does a better job from what I'm hearing. So it's better all in every way. And it does its primary job perfectly. Apparently you only lose like 5 frames, but if you start at 60, it only drops you down to about 55. So that's, you know, it requires you to have, but we have a hardwire here, so we don't really need, well, we needed to have the controllers out here, right?
Well, we were using the controllers out here, but
I think we're going to buy this.
I think so, too. Yeah, yeah. The thing is also, couch co-op tends not to be frame-heavy games anyways.
For sure.
So,
yeah.
I don't really see an issue there.
Guild Wars announces a Pro League. So they're working with ESL.
This is crazy, because how many years is Guild Wars 2?
Well, I think it's part of the expansion. New one? Yeah, okay, so that makes sense. I guess I read the whole article. I couldn't see what. Obviously, it's PvP of some sort.
There is PvP and kind of world versus world also. Right. So I'm not sure which one they're doing. So probably PvP, probably like a 5v5 or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So it's going to be 8 teams from North America, 8 teams from Europe. And that's how they're going to do it. $400,000. Listen, it's already working. We're talking about it. They're going to get more. If you haven't played this game, play it. It's free. It's really good.
It's literally free right now.
Bob, what else we got? Are we done? You want to wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap this up. We'll save some news for next week.
Okay. Okay.
We got a lot more, but it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
So the streaming, man, we had a really good stream on Saturday. Me and Emilio and some listeners even joined in for a bit. We were playing some TF2, and I think we're going to continue that tradition this Saturday as well. So definitely check out the Twitch channel, DL Gaming DOT Net.
I was hoping to play some Pulsar. That would be great to stream.
Just
so people can check it out and watch us die.
So it's 10 a.m. Pacific Standard right now.
Yeah. 10 to 1.
No, I moved it up to 10:30 to 12:30.
Yeah.
And then...
But on Saturdays, I continued to stream Heroes of the Storm after TF2. How'd that go, Bob? Yeah, pretty well. You know, I didn't get too many people coming in, and I play like almost all day Saturday if I don't have anything else scheduled.
I checked in a few times. I didn't see you on there. That was,
really?
Yeah.
Hopefully I had the right channel.
You sure the stream was up?
Hopefully it was on DLGaming.net.
I did it on your own goddamn stream. I don't know. Okay, John Lennon.
Emil also streams most days of the week, 10:30 to 12:30.
Yep. Tuesday to Saturday is the schedule. We're going to try to be a little more, especially when my schedule gets solidified, I can start taking on more hours too. So I'd like to start doing that a little bit more.
And the fan questions, we have a thread on our group. First of all, join our Steam group, free. You just join it. It's everybody's welcome. And then there we have, if you're wondering how we got these questions, we just have a thread that's, you know, fan questions, and we'll get back to you in usually the same week.
Yep.
So
awesome. And you can get to all our stuff at dlgaming.net, like our Twitter account, YouTube, all that stuff. Definitely leave us a review on iTunes. That helps us out like big time. So we always appreciate that. And it enters you into our review giveaways that we'll probably be doing again eventually.
We're doing one next week because I will have money to give away next week. Nice.
And as always, speaking for Bobby, Chad, and Emilio, titties.